From GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Adam Ragusea in for Celeste Headlee. Looks can deceive. On today's show, we're going to say hello to a sad clown with a buttery baritone voice. He gives popular songs a twist all his own.
You are the dancing queen, young and sweet, only 17.
And when you imagine clowns singing, that's probably not how they sound in your head, but that is Puddles the Clown. We're going to get to know him and learn more about the man behind the makeup. Also, people on the autism spectrum often struggle in social situations. This has not stopped the members of a comedy troupe who all have Asperger's syndrome. We'll talk to them too. That's coming up this hour. But first, yesterday, we took a look at three documentaries being screened this weekend at the Macon Film Festival. One of the films is Hotel Claremont. It chronicles the final months before the infamous Atlanta Motor Hotel shut its doors.
This place, these four walls, really have a lot of stories to tell, and that's what we're hoping to accomplish with this documentary, just tell one aspect of the many lives this hotel has lived.
We wanted to hear your memories of the Claremont. Here are your first thoughts. Terry Anulowitz tweets, "I remember meeting my husband there 16 years ago. At our wedding, the priest said the Holy Spirit was present in the Claremont Lounge." To which Sam Burnham responded, "The doctrine of omnipresence is hereby confirmed." Pretty good. We always want to know what you think. What are some of the places that no longer exist in Atlanta that hold a special meaning for you? We're on Twitter at OST Talk. You can also call us at 404-500-9457. That's 404-500-9457. Or you can post to facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio, and we might feature your comments on the show. Clowns, of course, come in all shapes and sizes. That's kind of their thing. You've got the happy clowns like Bozo.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Howdy, boys and girls.
Howdy, boys.
And a hey-de-hoo and a howdy to you, good buddy.
Okay. Then you got your more sinister clowns like the Joker.
I don't want to kill you. What would I do without you? No, you. You complete me.
I still prefer Jack Nicholson. Then you got Krusty the Clown, who is in a category all his own.
Hope you enjoyed that, kids, because Krusty's out of here for the summer. In the meantime, we'll be running... Classic Krusty.
Now, Atlanta can boast its own clown prince. His name is Puddles, also known as the sad clown with the golden voice. You may have been one of the 16 million people on YouTube to see him perform this song.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings in the movies.
Wow, quite a voice, quite a voice. And behind that voice and behind all of the makeup is a real guy named Mike Geyer. He's going to perform this weekend in Atlanta, and he joins us in our studio up in Atlanta. Hi, Mike, how you doing?
Hi. It's a fabulous day here in Atlanta.
Lovely. It's fabulous down here in Macon, where I am as well. This Puddles thing, like, it's a really singular tableau, right? Because one thing that we haven't mentioned is that you are tall, like NBA tall. You're this big dude. You play this clown who has this extraordinarily severe presence, owing in part to your height, sings these pop songs in a very accomplished voice, but I think maybe a deliberately kind of stilted style. Like, this is just a weird stew of ingredients. Where did this come from?
Puddles introduced himself to me when I was a bartender, and I played in some bands, and I was a bartender here in Atlanta, and he showed up one day, sat at the bar, didn't bother anybody, didn't say anything. He just motioned for some. He likes to drink a soda pop. So he tried every kind of soda on the gun that I had. There's a little soda gun, right?
Oh, yeah.
Every single one of them, the cola, the root beer, he tried the tonic, the soda water, and then once he had each one of those, he asked for a one drink with all of them combined, and I was like, I really liked his style, so we've become kind of partners inseparable since then.
Yeah. Where does his singing style come from?
I think it comes from just all the miles on his shoes. Mm. He's been going through his whole life, picking up crazy experiences, and it has just been molding him along the way. You can hear some things like he's a fan of Tony Bennett, and he's a fan of Scott Walker, but he's also
Walker, the governor of Wisconsin?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Scott Walker, the great singer. He was in the Walker Brothers in the 60s. They did a song called "The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore." He's a fan of those guys, but he's also a fan of contemporary singers as well. He really likes contemporary sounds as well as the classic singers from days gone by, as well as, you know, he likes opera. You know, who doesn't like opera a little bit? I mean, it all is part of the soup that comes out whenever he performs.
Puddles the Clown shows are called Puddles Pity Party. Puddles does not talk at all on stage. He merely sings. Here is a clip of him performing You Don't Know Me, made famous by Albany, Georgia's own Ray Charles.
You don't know me. No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips, longs to hold you tight.
Oh, listen to that.
He's just a friend. That's all I've ever been.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
That's beautiful.
He's got a soft spot.
I wasn't at that performance, and no. I saw it online, and I was like, he was really giving it,
feeling it,
giving it the juice. It was really emotive, and that band was hilarious.
Has Puddles had his heart broken?
Oh yeah, you could say that again. I mean, he's had his heart broken, not in the typical. I don't think in the typical ways, like. He had a dog that ran away when he was taking him for a walk one time over in the remember he was taking his dog for a walk in this abandoned factory in this part of Atlanta called Cabbage Town,
right.
And his dog just walked away from him. He just said, "I gotta quit you," and so he's had his heart broken in a lot of ways. But I think that he told me about that one experience. It really stands out. When he's just taking his dog for a walk, and the dog just looks at him and just walks away. No explanation. He went home.
Yeah, it's to be rejected by a clown's best friend. That's pretty, you can't imagine it getting much lower than that.
That's a bummer.
What does Puddles make of his YouTube stardom?
Buying shoes online. When you buy shoes online, and then you get the shoes, and you thought you were buying the right size, and they're the wrong size.
Oh.
I mean, that's...
Oh, the pain.
Yeah, and you have to return them.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
It is terrible. That's what happens when you go on the internet, right? But Puddles has been going on the internet a lot lately and doing very well on the YouTubes. What does Puddles make of that?
He's pretty dumbfounded by it. He's just doing what he's doing, and it seems to be resonating with a group of people, for the most part, pretty positively. People are really seem to be moved by what he's doing and the way he's doing it, and the way he can when he's performing, he can really just look you in the eye, and he conveys this emotion through song and his mannerisms, and people are really seem to be very, very affected by it. Some people get kind of squirmy about it, but he might not be for everybody, but he seems to be really resonating with a really wide, diverse group of people, young people and also old people, older people. And he seems to have a big fan base among like middle-aged guys. They're like, he gets fan letters and emails and posts on Facebook saying, I don't know what it is about you, but my granddaughter, my kid turned me onto your videos, and you just, there's something about, I've never written a fan letter in my life, but there's something about what you're doing is really connecting with me. And that, I think that's really interesting. That says something about...
About middle-aged dudes, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, middle-aged, I think guys come, it's tough to be a guy. You're taught to be
sensitive,
and you're taught to be tough, and it's those are conflicting emotion. Puddles allows you to be able to find your strength in your sensitivity, I think.
Absolutely. We're talking to Mike Geyer. He is a performer, a singer, a comedian, may or may not actually be Puddles the Clown. We won't reveal that. But outside of Puddles, Mike, you do an Elvis show each year called the Elvis Royale. You perform on stage with a dancing girl and a big band, and you do not dress up as Elvis, I understand, but you kind of evoke his energy. Let's hear a clip from one of these performances of a song that Elvis famously covered.
Baby, baby, I get down on my knees for you.
That's how much I love you, baby.
'Cause my suit's not too tight.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good song.
What do you
song.
Like about Elvis, Mike?
Oh, yeah. Elvis has it all. He's a total package. He's got the looks, he's got the sound, he's got the moves. That's what I love it. He's the triple threat.
I understand that you believe that Elvis may, in fact, still be around and watching you on YouTube. What do you think he's doing?
Well, you know, there's a theory that he... He's left this mortal coil, but I still think it's possible that he's still knocking around. I'm convinced. I was in South Florida one time, and I saw a guy riding a bicycle, pull it up to a tattoo shop, and he looked just like Elvis. And he went into the tattoo shop, locked his bike up, and I'm convinced that Elvis, he dropped out, he opened a tattoo shop, coffee shop, somewhere on the west coast of Florida.
I can't see Elvis riding a bicycle. His pants are too tight that he can't get down on his knees for a lovely lady, they're certainly too tight for him to get on a bicycle.
Pants too tight? Well, I don't know. You know, he's a triple threat. Who knows? I mean, he's living in rarefied air that you and I, we're
not
part
of that. Did he
seem
to lean out a little bit? I mean, did the bicycle lifestyle help him with his physique?
Oh, he was super, super fit. He was brown. He's just super tan and... You know, he's had tattoos on his knuckles. I couldn't read what this said. I was just like, look at that. That could be Elvis. Look at him. He looked just like him. Yeah, it was. So that's when I became convinced. I'm like, oh,
yes,
okay, now
that he's still around.
But I'm going to give him the space.
Does that put pressure on your performances when you're doing Elvis? That you know that in fact he might be watching.
No, I try not to think about that too much. I try to do my own thing, and not worry about. Other people. I just try to do my thing, and if people like it, people like it.
Well, your thing is definitely what you do. Been speaking with Atlanta singer Mike Geyer. This weekend, he's going to perform as Puddles, or rather, Puddles will just be in a room, and maybe Mike will be in the back somewhere.
Maybe.
Puddles is, of course, the sad clown with the golden voice. You can catch him Sunday night at 7:30 at the Center Stage Theater in Atlanta. Mike, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Pleasure's all mine.
Just ahead, we're going to talk about how student loans kept one woman from her spiritual career choice in the break room. It's on Second Thought. Neurological disorders, as a rule, are not funny. That doesn't mean that the people who suffer from them are not funny. Take, for example, the members of the comedy troupe Asperger's Are Us. Yes, they all actually do have Asperger's, and they're pretty funny. Have a listen.
Really great day. Glad to be here at this comedy show tonight.
Yeah, it's great to support people with disabilities by just throwing your money at them.
Yeah, I mean, I never actually befriended them in real life, but it feels great.
No.
It feels great to support them, though. Yeah, you know, I heard it's pretty funny, too.
At least it'll alleviate our prejudice and help our guilt complex.
Asperger's RS performs tonight in Atlanta. I'm joined by two members of the group now. With me is Jack Hankey. Hi, Jack.
Hi.
And also with you there is Ethan Finlan with us. Hi, Ethan.
Hi there.
So what's your origin myth? How did this group come together?
Well, our origin myth is that we were built from the dust that accumulated on a turtle that, yes. that the Earth rested on. But that's definitely not true. It's just a myth.
The Earth rests on multiple turtles. So.
Oh, yeah. It's turtles all the way down.
Yeah. we met in 11 years ago, 2005, at a camp that was set up for folks on the spectrum, particularly those with Asperger's syndrome. Noah, who's another member, he was our counselor at the time, and the four of us formed a bond that went deeper than the usual camper counselor, or as the correct terminology would be, inmate warden. We all sort of discovered that we had the same kind of sense of humor, and people found us pretty funny. So 5 years later, really, we decided to set up a comedy group.
Well, let me ask you this, guys. My sense is that people who are on the autism spectrum, humor is like one of the things that they tend to have particular trouble with. It rests so much on perception of often very subtle social stuff that folks on the spectrum almost by definition have trouble with. Is that am I just wrong in my sense of that, or is that just an issue that you guys deal with in doing your work?
Well, that's largely a misconception, although there is truth to it. And I want to give a sort of cautionary note and say there are certainly people on the spectrum, people with Asperger's, who don't find what we do funny. Conversely, though, there are people who are not, who think it's some of the funniest stuff they've ever seen. Speaking directly to your question, a lot of times, for instance, Aspies, as is a it's a not a pejorative term, generally.
That actually sounds like an award of some kind.
Yeah, it does. Good point.
Yeah. People who get Asperger's diagnosed are awarded the Aspie Award,
yeah.
where we get to call each other that.
Yep. So sometimes people with Asperger's will have trouble picking up on jokes, in some cases sarcasm. That wasn't really an issue for me ever, but our sense of humor is a bit different than, I suppose you would say, the average person. A lot of literal humor, a lot of wordplay. We tend to find that a lot more humorous than, say, observational stuff. Or if that we'll find, at least in our case, we'll have more of a taste for the absurd stuff. So if something goofy happens on a sitcom where the intent is like, oh, well, it's making fun of this guy, which we think is pretty mean, actually.
Yeah, kind of stupid and easy, too.
And stupid and easy. But if something sort of absurd happens as a result, like, we find humor in the absurdity of it. And again, that doesn't speak for everyone on the spectrum, but to say that Aspie's struggle with humor is largely a misconception, although it's based on truth, but it's exaggerated largely.
I'd also add that, I don't call it a disorder personally. It has a lot of material advantages. For example, we're more literal, which means that we can see patterns. I think we see patterns more easily. So yeah. Wordplay comes more naturally to us. Puns are much quicker for us than they are for other people. So there's a lot of things here that we can do we probably wouldn't be able to do if we weren't Aspies.
We're talking to two members of the comedy troupe Asperger's Are Us. They are performing tonight in Atlanta. And let's listen to another clip from your show. Here is the troupe member that you were talking about before, Noah Britton, playing the part of an actor, being interviewed by two casting directors that are played by you, Jack, and you, Ethan. The first voice that we hear is going to be Ethan's. Let's listen.
I see here that you were in Home Alone.
I played Kevin's special tutor.
Oh, and it says you were in Citizen Kane?
I was the newspaper.
And you were in Jurassic Park?
I was all of the dinosaurs.
Talk to us about where that sketch comes from.
Oh, wow. That's a really old one.
Wow.
We haven't done that one in like 5 years. So that is a character that Noah came up with, whose his motif is acting sort of creepy and talking very slowly like this.
Yeah, it's heavily in body language too.
Yeah, that one. It's kind of hard to get listening to. But that was, that was one from our earlier career, and you can certainly see the absurdity there. Absurdity, as I mentioned, big part of what we do as a group, certainly, where he's saying, I'm all the dinosaurs.
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd in the sense that, the character, basically, you can't tell that from the snippet, but he's, you know, he's somebody who is, everything he says is, you know, he's not actually creepy, or he's not actually doing anything wrong or anything that's actually
unseemly.
Dangerous, but I mean, he comes across in his body language and his voice as very creepy, so that's sort of a unexpected disconnect. I mean, comedy is the art of the unexpected, so that's the premise of the joke. Oh, they don't think it's very well executed there. We've learned from that.
do you guys ever, I mean, you're the name of your troupe, Asperger's R Us, is a joke about Asperger's, but does the content of your show ever tread into jokes about Asperger's?
No, that's not actually a joke about Asperger's.
Oh, really?
Again, we can see why someone would think that. We've often said that, you know, if we were to go back, we would have picked a different name because people kind of assume, like, you know, because of the poor grammar, it's some sort of riff on Asperger's, but we really did it just to identify who we are. Like, yeah, we're all people with Asperger's. As to your other question, we don't make jokes about Asperger's, certainly not in the sense where it's like, oh, well, I do this thing differently, or I struggle with executive functioning, and that's funny. We think that's obnoxious and stupid. What we do incorporate is stuff that's satirical towards that mentality. So, for instance, that first clip you played.
The butt of that joke is people like me who might not understand Asperger's and get uncomfortable around dealing with it.
Well, not so much that as people who hear about our show and they're like, oh, wow, that's such a brave thing to do. I'm going to out of pity, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Very patronizing. And,
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're not interested in pity. We're interested in money.
Yeah. You know, and you know, if someone with that mindset comes and they're like, wow, you know, that's pretty funny, or even if they don't think we're funny and they're like, oh, that's kind of cool. They I'm happy to see them change their mind, but I mean, we're not in this to raise awareness. We're in this because we're all funny and the name comes from us all happening to have Asperger's. And we do believe that it has an influence on our style of humor.
Jack Henke and Ethan Finlan are members of the comedy troupe Asperger's R Us. The four-member group performs tonight at 8 at Dad's Garage Theater Company in Atlanta. And a documentary about them is coming soon to Netflix. Jack and Ethan, thanks to both of you and good luck on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks very much.
It's been a long week. We looked back at the 20th anniversary of the Summer Olympics in Atlanta. We analyzed the political effect of there being fewer white Christians in the U.S. these days, at least proportionally. And we got several sneak peeks at the Macon Film Festival. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and reflect on the week's events. It's time for the break room.
Alita hopes to join the Sisters of Life convent on the Upper West Side in September. But there's a problem. They told her she has to pay off all of her student debt.
Fired for displaying what some say is a symbol of hate, a cop in hot water tonight, this time for a flag controversy that just cost her her job.
Leslie Jones was trending. By 6:38 p.m., Jones tweeted, "Twitter, I understand you got free speech. I get it. But there has to be some guidelines."
And we are spread out all over the state today. Joining us in the break room from Atlanta are Hector Fernandez. He's a professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. Hi, Hector.
Morning.
With you is LGBT educator and activist Robbie Medwed. Hey, Robbie.
Good morning. How are you?
Lovely. In our Savannah studio, we are joined again by Amy Condon. She's an editor with Savannah Magazine. Hello, Amy.
Hi. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Maybe I'm not having as good a time as you are. It sounds like things are funny in Savannah.
Yeah.
With me in Macon is Charles Richardson, editorial page editor for the Telegraph of Macon. Hello, Charles.
Good morning, everybody.
So let's start the break room off with a spiritual note. A New York woman wants to be a nun, but the church says that she can't join a convent until she pays off her student loans. Alita Taylor got a job as a costume designer on Broadway after graduating from college with a fashion degree, but she told CBS New York that she had a different calling.
I had all these desires. I wanted to have a career. I wanted to have a family and marriage, but your heart begins to shift.
Alita says that she planned to pay off her student loans over the next decade, but in order to get into the church, she had to begin soliciting donations through a GoFundMe page in order to meet her goal and get them paid off. So she's finally going to be taking her vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience in September, though arguably she already made two of those vows already when she signed her loan documents. Ba-doom! Thank you. Thank you. I was here all week.
Yeah.
What do you think of the convent's policy that you can't be a nun if you are in the hole? Robbie, you want to start off?
Yeah, so I'm Jewish. I don't really understand how the church works, but there's just something a little bit absurd about all of this. I would figure that, you know, they want more people helping out. Why wouldn't they lend a little bit of a hand? And she can work it off as a nun, volunteer other places, and pay that back somehow.
Yeah, but that's the problem, right, Hector? Is that it's like if you're a nun, you're not supposed to be making money with which to pay off
exactly
your loans. And what, is the church going to absorb your debt?
Yeah, the nuns have it right. I mean, you shouldn't embark on some expensive endeavor if you haven't taken care of certain financial responsibilities. You know, as a nun, she can't work outside the convent, and the convent is not going to provide any stipend. So how the blazes is she going to cover it? The debt.
So I've seen Sister Act, and they put on a great concert to raise money. I don't know why she can't just do the same
thing.
Movies.
That's the movies.
Amy, is this just?
Well, one thing I couldn't figure is if the loans were federal and she's working for a nonprofit, which basically she would be, aren't they forgiven after 10 years? But if they're bank loans, then she has the responsibility to pay them back. So I mean, it's like truly given to Caesar what is Caesar's in terms of their stance. But and I'm paying off my school loans right now, so I completely empathize with her.
Right there with
it's
you.
Painful. It is so painful every month when that money goes right out of the bank account.
Charles is like, is this a thing where we're just seeing, and this is just, you know, student loan debt being kind of a ubiquitous condition among people these days. Is that, this is just another example of it affecting every facet of life, right?
Well, I'm just wondering, one day she wants to have a career and have kids and get married, and next she wants to be a nun? I mean,
when there may be bigger
Lord
issues
calls,
here.
The good Lord calls.
I mean, it's just, wow, that's talking about a whole different lifestyle.
She went to a FIT, most likely.
Yeah.
So this is a very fashionable nun.
Yeah, but
she'll make her own habit. Yeah.
Yeah, but she can make it, but it's going to look the same.
That's right. I guess that is the essence of it, isn't it?
So I think the convent may see some other things in her that we're not privy to. Making sure that she is very committed to what she's going to try to do, because 10 years down the road, you know, she might say, oh, really, that fashion thing was really what I wanted to do after all.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. But for those of us who are still paying off our student loans, the next story is of particular interest to us and maybe gets under our skin. The Chronicle of Higher Education, they rank salaries of the leaders of the nation's public colleges and universities, the private ones too. Near the top of the list for public school leader salaries is Georgia State University President Mark Becker. He makes more than $1 million a year in total compensation. That is the fifth highest salary for a public college president in the nation. Meanwhile, you got Georgia Tech President Bud Peterson making the 12th highest base pay in the country at more than 676 $26,000. Again, that's for public schools. The top private school salaries are like 3 to 4 times that. So, Hector, let's go ahead and make you really uncomfortable and put you on the spot. What do you think about your boss making that much money?
Hector, be careful. Danger. Well, danger.
I'm not crazy about it, but I'm going to give you some context. I mean, President
you
Becker.
You have tenure, right?
Yeah, I'm tenured. I'm tenured.
All right.
I'm full professor.
Good for you.
But that doesn't give me a free pass. Well, in any case, he was brought in from the University of South Carolina, where he was really instrumental in takeover of Palmetto College into South Carolina. And he just did the same thing in Georgia, taking over Perimeter College and transforming Georgia State into the largest university in the state. So that must have something to do with that. The problem with this is people read this and they imagine people at Georgia State are rolling in money. And,
right.
And I'll tell you, the administrative personnel may be rolling in money. The faculty are not. I mean, a bunch of us, we had a race this year, including myself. And it was basically because our salaries were way below the national average.
Mm, yeah.
And I would love to think that the university must have some sort of semblance of, social justice. And I don't see much social justice in acute salary disparity.
The argument against university presidents making seven figures is kind of obvious. But before we move on, I just want to ask, does anybody want to try to defend this level of compensation? Anybody?
Well, I would only make this point. The office of president or the title of president may be somewhat of a misnomer. They should really be called professional fundraisers.
Yes.
Because
that's what they do. They don't have much of a hand in running the universities. They leave that to other people. But they provide a vision, and they go out and get the money to fund that vision. So I guess you could say this is more of a commission.
That's right. Wow. I hadn't thought
That's
of it
an
that way.
Interesting take.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and move on. Let's see. Oh, one more higher ed topic before we leave this
There's
entirely.
There's a theme here.
Yes, there is absolutely a theme, and it's even more linked than people realize. Some students are facing greater financial challenges than just the loan payments that we were talking about before. Take, for example, a guy by the name of Fred Barley, 19-year-old student at Gordon State College in Barnesville, Georgia. He was homeless and up until recently lived in a tent outside of campus. Fred was waiting for the dorms to open next month, so he figured he'd just pitch a tent on the quad or something. He told WSB-TV that police, he told them what the police said to him when he was outside his tent after they got a trespassing complaint about him. Let's listen.
Hello, is anybody in there? And I'm like, yeah. I was nervous to answer, but I was like, yeah. And he's like, come up with your hands where we can see him. So I zip open the tent, and I'm just showing my hands like I'm good.
Now, Fred is doing much better. Local police covered a couple of nights in a motel for him, and the college eventually let him into the dorms early. He also got a job. He has received tens of thousands of dollars in donations. Pretty happy ending, it seems, for Fred, but there are thousands of college students who end up homeless and are not lucky enough to also end up on television. What's one of the things that the country could do to prevent this from happening to other students, Amy?
Well, going back to the previous question about perhaps the fundraising should be directed not to padding a president's or a development person's salary and actually should go toward the students.
You got to spend money to make money, though, right, Charles?
Well, that's exactly right. But to the question at hand, one way you stop a homeless college student is that you stop a homeless high school student.
Wow.
I know of cases right here in our middle Georgia area where the school has personnel to watch out for students that are homeless right here. And I'm pretty sure in the other communities where you're broadcasting from, the very same thing applies.
Yeah.
So to hear that there are college students that are homeless doesn't surprise me one bit.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on. A police officer in Roswell, Georgia, was fired last week. His dismissal may have been connected to the fact that he was flying a Confederate flag at his home. There are lots of professionals, like some kinds of journalists, who are barred from expressing strong opinions, even in their off hours. Question at hand is, should cops be banned from doing potentially offensive things when they're off the clock? Robbie, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah, I would say we're trying to get cops into communities so that they can actually learn about them, get to know them, live there, and be a part of them. And if you're putting something out on your front lawn that has such a strong, strong meaning to it, it's definitely going to make that job a lot harder. It's not like the flag was inside the house. It's outside. That's a really public statement to make. And it really makes people probably feel really unsafe and that they can't trust the police when they need to go to them. And we've seen that across the country, that that's not where we need to be going right now.
Amy, you're the editor of Savannah Magazine. You have reporters who I'm sure you expect a certain degree of professional decorum from them, even when they're not working for you. Do you think that we should treat cops similarly?
I think if you take an oath as part of your job to serve and protect all and to uphold the laws of a community or a nation, you are and should be held to a higher standard. So when that police car is sitting outside of that house with that flag, you are making a statement not just about yourself, but of your community.
And, but then again, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, and I mean, we don't know what the chief found out when speaking to that person. And clearly in that article, the chief had a change of heart also by going out into the community and meeting people and sort of breaking open their own idea, his or her own ideas. So by confronting it, which should have happened, they may have learned more about, you know, what that particular officer's point of view was. And that may have led to it. We really don't know what transpired, truly.
No, certainly we do
not
know
if this is, and we don't really know if this is a causal relationship here.
But we can at least explore the idea in the abstract, Hector. And, you know, cops in a lot of communities make shockingly little money. Are they not entitled to just go home when they go home?
Well, on a general basis, what you do on your spare time is your business. But if you're a public figure and you're using government-issued vehicles or facilities, that rule does not apply. So, I mean, whatever, you know, if he had the police car right in front of his home, that's not correct.
Charles?
Well, law enforcement officers are on duty 24 hours a day. They're on call all the time. That's why he had the police car. If the police car hadn't been in the driveway, I could have said, fly it as long as you want because that's your private property. I don't take any offense at that. But once that police car is in that driveway or in front of that house, he is representing the Roswell Police Department.
Exactly.
And then he's got to represent.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, you or I, Adam, people know us. They know you. That you work at Mercer University, GPB. They know me. I work at the Telegraph.
Oh, they sure do.
And
and you're held to a higher standard.
Right. You got to be on all the time.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the reality, especially with social media. And that will lead us to our next topic. But let me remind listeners that you are listening to The Break Room on Second Thought. And our Break Room contestants this week are Amy Condon with Savannah Magazine, Robbie Medwed, LGBT educator and activist in Atlanta, Hector Fernandez. He teaches at Georgia State. Charles Richardson, editorial page editor for The Telegraph here in Macon, where I physically am at the moment. And speaking of offensive behavior that can spill over onto the internet, Twitter has taken the very unusual move of banning one of its most prominent users for life. Milo Yiannopoulos is the technology editor with the conservative website Breitbart.com. The social media company Twitter, they made this move after Yiannopoulos was tweeting or at least sort of allegedly marshaling some tweets, offensive tweets directed at comedian Leslie Jones, who stars in the new Ghostbusters film. In fact, Jones was bombarded with offensive tweets after the film's release and after Yiannopoulos posted a really critical review of the movie on Breitbart. Let's listen.
Jones was called the N-word, a big-lipped coon, and orangutan. Monday morning, 9:12 a.m., Jones spoke out publicly. She tweeted that some people here are disgusting and, quote, I'm blocking your filthy ass. Then she began retweeting attacks, posting as often as every minute. At 12:45 p.m., she tweeted, okay, I've been called apes and even got a pic with semen on my face.
Yikes. That's a report from NPR's Ari Shahani, by the way. NPR says that Yiannopoulos' Twitter account itself, his own Twitter account, did not contain any of these most loathsome attacks, but he used two other platforms, 4chan and Reddit, to assault Jones. Twitter reps say that the site will be more proactive in the future about banning people who engage in targeted harassment and abuse like the kind that Jones was subject to. Robbie, I'm going to go to you. You know, one of the things that we haven't mentioned about Yiannopoulos is that he's gay.
Yep.
And he that's not just like a side part of his
persona.
It's not. That's big. That's his big thing. He's like the conservative gay guy, or he's the gay guy who is pushing back on political correctness. What do you make?
He is, and he's also, I think we should just say from the flat out beginning that he's just a disgusting human being. There's nothing positive about this person whatsoever. And the only thing that upsets me about this story is that Twitter isn't being a little bit more proactive in hate speech from all of their angles. But I have absolutely no sympathy for him whatsoever, not even a little bit.
So let me tell you guys something. So like an article that I wrote in Slate last week got picked up in the kind of conservative hate sphere in the last few days, and the site Newsbusters, which has gone after me before, went after me again, and they did their whole thing on me, and so like I have been getting, you know, a steady stream of internet hate the last several days. And I've been kind of engaging because I just enjoy giving as good as I get, mostly because I think these people aren't expecting it. They're expecting you to just kind of sit there and take it. But because, you know, I'm an academic fat cat now and I don't have to answer to an editor anywhere. Like, you know, I just love to give it back to these people. All right. But like, you know, Amy, maybe that look doesn't look so good on a journalist. Maybe I should just... Whether you're a journalist or you're an actor like Jones, like if you're someone who has put yourself out as a public figure and put yourself up for scrutiny, should we just sit back and take it?
I don't know that you should sit back and take it. I don't have a problem with the engagement. I think, you know, dialogue is one thing. And being able to have a dialogue with your readers or even people who completely disagree with you and be able to have a dialogue, that's one thing. And I think that's super helpful as a journalist. And I think it's been important. That's one thing social media has done that's really important for sort of breaking down the barrier between people who report the news or shape opinion and the people who read them or angry. But... the thing about harassment, that's completely different.
I see.
And I think there's a big difference between the ad hominem attacks that are not meant to engage but to diminish. We need to be mindful of those. And I'm not sure I have an answer or even a way of dealing with it, but I don't know that I applaud that you have like the spirit to fight it and get back in it
My wife would rather I didn't. Charles, let me ask you a question. So, I mean, you deal with this at the paper. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you draw the line between what is spirited criticism and what is harassment?
Oh, I have no problem with criticism or engaging in a dialogue with a reader that may dislike what I've written or have a different point of view. But I treat them with courtesy. And I expect to be treated with courtesy. Once it starts going into name calling or whatever, the conversation is over as far as I'm concerned. I stop
exactly.
responding. Because one, I've got better use of my time. And there's no reason to respond to people that just want to call names. It's just like my first rule of thumb is rule number one, he who argues with a fool is a fool.
Well, the fools who've been arguing with me on the internet have dubbed me a word terrorist, which I actually kind of like.
That's really, you should put that in your Twitter bio.
You're a word terrorist?
No.
I
think that might be happening. But let's go ahead and try to squeeze in one or two more topics. As everyone has undoubtedly heard by now, Melania Trump's Republican National Convention speech was strikingly similar to Michelle Obama's convention speech given 8 years earlier. Here is a mashup of both.
Your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do. That you treat people with dignity and respect.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise. That you treat people with respect.
Now, again, this story is just so amazing. But, like, you know, more recently what's happened is that the speechwriter who committed this little sin here the fall person, you know, has come forward and accepted responsibility for that. But that was, like, 48 hours after you had the Trump campaign insisting, no, this is not plagiarism. This is just two people expressing similar ideas using common words. Hector Fernandez at Georgia State, as a college professor, did that argument ever hold any weight for you?
Nah, not at all.
I just love Laura Benanti. I mean, I would rather have her as Melania Trump. You know, this was perfect. This makes no sense at all. I mean, well, I doubt this woman will be fired, first of all, because she's written books for Trump. She's a ghostwriter for Trump, right? Mm. So it just shows that the Trump campaign is unorganized and it lacks imagination. I mean, in the end, it's just hype and words, but that's precisely what makes Trump so dangerous, right? Because a lot of people are falling for hype and words and the politics of fear, I might add.
But he fires people for a living, so I'm really surprised he let that go.
Guess what? November come, he will be fired.
Well, he
But that's exactly what's sort of interesting about this story is that at the very least, what this represents is organizational incompetence. Like a professional speechwriting staff should not let through copy like that. And the entire sort of premise of Trump's campaign, aside from all of one of the premises for Trump's campaign is that he's a great manager.
He
maybe
not
he doesn't
a
have
great
government
manager.
Experience, but like he says, I'm going to hire the smartest guys. He's apparently not hiring the smartest guys, or maybe he is. Robbie, is this all just an intentional distraction? Maybe this was like a plant to keep the media from covering things that actually matter.
I mean, I would be hard pressed to think that they're that smart to do this, but I will say, you know, this woman actually she wrote on Trump Organization letterhead, not campaign letterhead. There's no record of her getting paid by the campaign, which means she actually was never hired by that. Which means now that the Trump Organization is illegally contributing to the campaign, there's a whole level of other stuff going on that just speaks to a clear idea that nobody has any idea what's going on. And I'm not sure that anyone really in the country at this point really has any idea what's going on in reality with
Trump.
Not even Trump. Not any of us. We've gone into some fantasy, scary, scary fantasy world with him and everything that's going on here.
Well, one upside is that because this election is so bananas, public radio ratings have been going through the roof the last couple of months. And for that, I thank Mr. Trump. But we're out of time for the break room today. Thanks to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, LGBT educator and Atlanta activist Robbie Medwed, Savannah Magazine editor Amy Condon, and Telegraph of Macon editorial page editor Charles Richardson. Everybody have a great weekend.
Thanks very much.
Same thing.
All right. Great weekend.
And that is it for today's show, but we want to hear from you, dear listener. We talked earlier about banning users on social media for what they say, especially if what they say is particularly offensive or insulting. Is that a violation of free speech? What is the line between harassment and criticism? Reach us through facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. Tweet us at OSTTalk. You could leave a message. We do listen to them. Our number is at 404-500-9457, 404-500-9457. That's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusea. Been loving being with you this weekend. Celeste is back at you on Monday. Have a great weekend.